staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me the egg. So tomorrow I got nothing.
I really believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Hi, Gamble Mash here on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program for February 15th, 2017. Want to do a big shout out to anyone and everyone involved with the evacuation from the Oroville Dam spillway emergency, all the responders, all the folks that helped with emergency shelter, and huge, huge thanks and grace to folks that are back in their home. I'm so much happier and pleased to be doing a show post-evacuation versus doing one while people have been evacuated. And one thing I want to start off with is a little bit of a news flash. You know, I've been talking on the previous shows about dispelling myths, and there was a bunch of myths floating around the day of the point in time survey back in January, and I had an opportunity to get a voicemail response back from Mark Orm. Mark Orm is the city manager for Chico, California, up here in Butte County. And, you know, without digging into the minutiae, he pretty much collaborated some street work that I had done on all the different types of rumors, i.e. that the police were arresting people as they were taking surveys in downtown Plaza. It really, literally was. Someone smashed windshield, and that's why they were down there. Can't make this stuff up. But you know, there was a bunch of other things. But the real thing that I came away impressed with, as well as talking with Ed Mayer, who you're going to hear shortly, is how involved Mark Orm is within the homeless community. And when I mentioned that to Ed, he had actually mentioned the police chief, Michael Bryan, as well. So I know if you look at a thing as statistically mundane, so to speak, as counting homeless people, I think it's extremely positive that the city manager was so involved in that process, and I want a big shout out for that. We have a really cool show tonight. We're going to have Jennifer Barzi leading the show. She got a pollination grant. I shouldn't say she. Her organization, 6th Street Center for Youth. Shout out down here in downtown Chico. I got a pollination grant that's going to go towards a new Butte County Youth Advisory Board that they have started up. Also got some really cool news around Homeward Street Journal coming to Chico, California, baby. Street newspaper. We're going to have our own page. Really cool news, and it's actually kind of fun to put it together because I pulled some interviews I've done through some of them 4 or 5 years ago on the streets around that newspaper. And then, as I mentioned, Ed Mayer is going to be on talking about the impact to the housing authorities' operations from the evacuation. He's also going to give us an update on the point in time and the impacts to his budget based upon new federal government mandates. And then we're going to wrap the show. You know, I always get a lot of feedback when I do street level journalism, and I've been doing a business improvement district survey I mentioned on the last show, and everyone that took the survey, I offered them an opportunity to speak for a minute or so on radio, and I just have to say it's heartwarming to me to see how much pain, how much angst, and how much hope, a lot of hope. You're going to hear all of that in these wonderful human beings as they kind of get their voices out there on People Power Radio. Okay, I'm here with Jennifer Barzi, the program manager here at 6th Street Center for Youth in downtown Chico, and she's going to tell us about this pollination project that she just got for the Youth Advisory Council. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did. The Pollination Project is actually a really awesome organization that funds different projects trying to, you know, make a difference in their community, and we are excited to be one of the recipients of a seed grant from the Pollination Project. And this grant will go to is $1,000 that will go to get the Butte County Youth Advisory Council going with some things that they're going to be working on.
Cool. I mean, what are some of the things they're working on?
Right. So the Youth Advisory Council is comprised of young people who have maybe been in foster care, who maybe currently or have experienced homelessness, have experienced incarceration, you know, or just other experiences that were challenged in life. And all of these youth then are coming together to identify different projects in the community they want to work on. They're talking about possibly even going to Sacramento in a couple months and speaking to legislators. So some really exciting things coming up.
Are there any projects that they've already kind of picked out that the Pollination Project's got some money they're going to fund right towards it, or are they still figuring that out?
They're still figuring out. Actually, we've only just had the first couple of meetings.
Nice.
The next meeting will be on the 21st at 6th Street at 3 p.m.
I can't help but ask this question because Shahara Hyatt from the California Homeless Youth Project's kind of been leading most of our shows about youth homelessness. So when you say you're going down to talk to legislatures, are you involved with her group or some other group, or just yourself you're going to go down there?
Well, we just are just in planning stages of it, so I think that she might be someone we definitely want to get in contact with.
Awesome. Anything else we need to know about 6th Street Center for Youth and this pollination grant, Jennifer Barzee?
Just that we're really excited, and if you know any youth that might be interested in being a part of it, let them know about it.
Yeah, Homewood Street Journal coming to Chico, California, spring of 2017. Stay tuned.
Yeah, we're looking at the latest version of the Homewood Street Journal, actually published right out of here in Sacramento, and it's a member of the North American Street Newspaper Associations. This was given to me by a very excited and proud Vietnam War veteran who loved the headlines about the Rhode Island bill for the homeless. But basically, this is released what seems to be monthly or possibly every other month, depending on what they have to put in. But they cover issues worldwide, globally, as well as within North America. Over here you can see things about child labor laws, how to get your message and information out across the information age. But just basically a forum for local and North American issues related to homelessness and poverty. The back end here has a nice quote-unquote complete laundry list of all the folks that can give you a hand resource-wise. And up here is a way to actually purchase the physical magazine itself, the journal itself, and have it sent to your home for $15. Even me, with my limited resources, I'm going to gift this to a local organization so that they have it for staff and homeless folks who come in. Anyway.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Morris. What up? Now I got to kind of shake this around, get the handshake going. I just had a meal with Morris. Morris is an awesome guy. So what do you got going on here? Selling the Homeward Street Journal.
Yes.
The new version's coming out, right?
New version should come out.
It's April, May.
May the 1st.
Yeah? And how long you been out here selling this, Morris?
Just for 2 days.
2 days?
2 days.
Yeah? How you been doing with it?
Very well. A lot of people reject the paper, but they'll give a donation.
Yeah?
And then they'll want me to give it to someone else or sell it to someone else.
That's good for you. That works out.
That works out. But, of course, we would like them to read it.
Uh-huh.
You know, become more aware of the homeless situation.
If there anything you want people to know about the paper, what would that be?
To read and get well informed.
Kind of a blessing. I was talking with Neil, who used to be involved with Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee and the Homeward Street Journal. How about some words around that, Neil, and what a great program both of those things are, the paper and the Homeless Organizing Committee?
Well, it's a true blessing because the shock office helps a lot of people. I mean, not only vendors, the Homeward Street Journal, which allows people that don't have it into them to panhandle to make a living without having, you know, to ask anybody for it. And none of that, it also had a hand deep in with the creation of Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, and also the tent city in Sacramento.
Now, you were an active member of the shock meetings that they would hold at the Delaney Center?
No, I have. I was just a vendor.
So you were a street vendor for the Homeward Street Journal?
And two petitions, and the ban on sleeping and stop the illegal camping.
What was your involvement? Did you kind of help protest? You help write the petitions? What did you do for them?
I pushed the petitions in the Homeward Street Journal. Mm-hmm. And I would like for that, you know, to take place here. I've been thinking seriously about starting another petition, and that's to stop the indecency on humanity. Mm-hmm. To stop the indecency on humanity. Everybody has a right to be here.
What would you say about having the Homeward Street Journal up here?
I would think it'd be beneficial, not only for the community, but also for the people that are down and out.
For people that might not know, maybe give us a little description of what the Homeward Street Journal is all about.
The Homeward Street Journal is a paper that they edit. It talks about world news and crisis and homelessness and places you can go for aid. And it also helps a person that's down and out, you know, be able to move forward in life, you know, with their head held high instead of looking to the ground.
Proud Reef Radio programs made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Lagaro Marketing Services. Lagaro is helping businesses, associations, and nonprofits stand out with outside-the-box promotional products. Whether it's branded apparel for your staff or an event, or promotional products with a purpose, Lagaro tailors programs to meet its clients' needs. To learn how Lagaro can help your organization through target marketing, visit lagaro.com or call 530-355-8685.
All right, my distinct pleasure to have in the pre-recorded studio here Ed Mayer, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the County of Butte, and he's actually going to give us the news and the goods on the evacuation and the status of Section 8 housing and a whole bunch of things. Welcome to KZFR. Ed Mayer?
Hey, Bill. Great to be here, as always. Yeah, some interesting information from the last few days. Obviously, we had 2 days of evacuation down in the corridor from Oroville to Gridley and Biggs, Live Oak, to Yuba City. So everyone was evacuated, 180,000 people altogether. But amongst those we serve at the Housing Authority, we had 1,100 of our households displaced by the disaster. 700 Section 8 voucher holders who were leasing from landlords throughout the area. We had another 200 public housing residents, another 200 who were living in other properties of ours, financed in different ways. Our farm labor camp was evacuated. So we had an enormous number of our clients. Fully a third of the clients we serve in this county were displaced. And during that displacement, because of the way the evacuation fell out so quickly on Sunday, we had no way of helping our clients and no way of knowing how they actually got out of their homes and what they did to survive over the last 2 days. But to their credit, from everything we've seen this morning, everyone's back in their homes, happy to be there. We saw a minimum of destruction, vandalism, looting, that kind of thing. So it appears that the citizens of Oroville were remarkably civil in their evacuation and helpful to each other. I mean, where we put up 180,000 people in the North State here, this is extraordinary. But for those, of course, either homeless or those who have very few resources, this has obviously been very distressing. We received a couple calls yesterday from residents of our housing down there. They were frustrated. They couldn't go to work. They were afraid that because they couldn't go to work, they wouldn't be able to pay their rent. And not being able to pay their rent, then, of course, they're facing a housing issue. So these are their concerns. So it was all rather interesting to watch play out. The idea here is that the evacuation was orderly. And as far as we know, everyone's in one piece. But we have yet to really understand how this may have impacted, obviously, those who are of very low income. And the homeless, we have no idea what happened to them during this set of events. So that will unfold in the next few weeks. We'll find out more about that.
You know, I guess it's the time to say we're really grateful that, you know, the worst-case scenario didn't come to fruition, because that would have been just, wow, you know. I guess one thing to land on before we move on to some of those other programs is, you know, just kind of maybe color a little bit more for our listeners just how dire it is when you live in paycheck to paycheck and all of a sudden you've been evacuated and you're no longer working. I mean, maybe you can give us some insight on how it feels to be like that and what kind of impacts we would have had if people had been out of their homes for 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, but our concern, I'm not the best person to speak to this because I've not been homeless myself, but I certainly visit with enough of our clients to appreciate their immediate concerns, which are, you know, if I have a job and I am not able to go to work, there's a whole avalanche of consequences that occurs. And many of our clients down in the Oroville area don't even have cars, so we don't know how they got evacuated. Friends, family, associates, but obviously the evacuation order occurred very quickly. So the community response was phenomenal. But for those without shelter, food, reliable shelter, food, on the edge, this is just another stressor. And our greatest fear, of course, was that the evacuation order would be extended into weeks or months because of the stability of that dam. And if that had occurred, we truly would have a human disaster on our hands. And there would have been a whole nother level of triage required. in that event. So thankfully, this ended in short order and relatively painlessly. But do not underestimate the impacts to these extremely low-income households who may have lost income, who had to expend precious resources on hotels or motels or temporary shelter, whatever they were able to do. Eating out of the home is obviously a lot more expensive than eating in the home. So this is a big financial stressor for many, many of those we serve.
Listeners, Joyce joining us here on KZFR 90.1 FM. You are listening to Ed Mayer, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the County of Butte.
So I also understand that you have some updates on the point in time that was done the third week in January?
That's correct. Every 2 years, in conformance with federal housing requirements out of HUD, we perform a point in time homeless count. And this year, our survey was, I guess successful is the right word, even though it's the wrong word. Successful in that we identified, we took in over 1,800 surveys. Typically in past years, we have found anywhere from 1,100 to 1,500 on the streets. So it would appear at first blush like we have an uptick in homelessness, a significant uptick. But the data's not been entered. It hasn't been analyzed. All we have are the raw number of surveys to work with. So very interestingly, we have 1,800 from around the county, and we'll see where that takes us in terms of the data. We expect to have information, a full report out in another 2 months' time, in late April or May.
So just also to clarify for listeners, there's HUD requires that we, quote-unquote, every jurisdiction counts their quote-unquote, folks experiencing homelessness every couple of years. That includes folks in transitional communities and all a bunch of sundry different things. Obviously, people living under bridges, but there's also a survey that the counties themselves kind of put together, and I was really pleased with the survey this year. Everyone I've talked to thought it was well thought out and well executed, so I appreciate all your efforts at the COC.
Difficult to do a survey of this type because we want to drill down and get as much information about the population we're working with. Of course, as soon as you drill down, you're getting into people's personal lives. And so the information sharing tends to be a bit one-sided. We're asking a lot of information from those we have found homeless, and they feel kind of vulnerable giving us the goods. So creating a survey instrument that is neutral, friendly, user-friendly is very important in this year. It would appear that we struck the correct balance.
Yeah, I know. I know you and I had talked after the last one. I talked to some other folks, and anyway, I just thought that this survey was very well done, and I just appreciate all the efforts on that. I think you also had some updates on maybe some ripple effects from cutbacks to Section 8 housing.
Well, what's occurred in the wake of the election of President Trump is that Congress, who is responsible for passing a budget every year, a federal budget, has decided that, and I think in response to the administration's request to hold off, Congress has determined or has passed a continuing budget resolution. So basically what they've done is instead of creating a new federal budget for 2017, Congress has taken the 2016 budget and just pushed it forward. So we have seen what's called a flat budget. Problem is, when we operate a program like our Section 8 program, where we're providing rental assistance to households leasing from the private sector, our operating costs aren't flat. We see increased utility expenses. We see increased rents from year to year, so our operating costs increase. We were just, as a function of the continuing resolution, we were issued a letter by HUD that basically says that the amount of money we will receive this year for Section 8 assistance, these are the housing assistance payments that go to landlords in support of these tenancies, will be set at 95%. Well, that's a 5% cut to our program. In order for us to reduce our program size by 5%, based on attrition, where we're not terminating households, just a natural fall off of families as we go forward in time, we've had to shut our program down to new admissions. So starting in December, the Housing Authority shut its Section 8 program to new admissions, and we will not open that program to new admissions until May at the earliest. So that's 5 months here that the program is on ice, simply by as a function of the fact that Congress has not passed a budget that would provide for ongoing operations within historical context. So our program is shrinking. The sad part is we are not able to serve the community at this point in terms of provision of Section 8 assistance. We're on ice.
So when you say you're on ice, you've got that whole lottery process that plays out based upon, you know, how many vouchers you have and your resources to execute those vouchers. So you pretty much said, we got to quit pulling people from the lottery pool because we, wow. So that's a tremendous impact for our listeners, man. I've talked to several half dozen people that have had vouchers in their hand, and it's life-changing. It's just like, that's devastating, Ed. I'm sorry to hear that.
So there's a couple of pieces working here. One is every year we open up our Section 8 wait list. Last year in October when we opened it, we had about 5,500 applications. Our process now is we pick 1 year's. We lotterize 1 year's worth of admissions, which for us was about 1,200 households. So we picked 1,200 households out of that 5,500 that we would work with through the course of this year. Of course, with the 5-month freeze in our program, basically those 1,200 households are going to get pushed back by 5 months. And our next opening of the wait list will occur further down the road. So we've basically pushed everything off. And that's unfortunate for those who need service. And we have no shortage of need in this community, of course, being a high-cost community.
No, and that'll have a direct impact on your numbers for homeless people experiencing homelessness, because this is housing. That's the only way you become unhomeless is to be housed. So any final comments or quotes, maybe something we missed, Ed Mayer?
I can't think of anything, Bill. Always appreciate being here and your interest in the subject. Again, we're in very transitional times. We're very curious to see where the Trump administration goes relative to housing and its prioritization of housing, to see if we can't address the needs of what we estimate to be some 40% of Americans who are paying too much for housing. In this county alone, 30% of the renter households in Butte County pay more than 50% of their income for rent and utilities, and that's considered a severe rent burden. That's very common across the state. I think the last piece here, that's the last factor that's not a happy factor, is our vacancy rate. Our local vacancy rates in housing are at such a low level that it's very difficult for someone with a Section 8 voucher to go find housing in the first place. We have about half of those who actually receive a voucher who lease up in the end. And this is typical through the entire state. California, as a state, as a whole, has a severe housing shortage. So no matter what kind of assistance we can provide relative to Section 8 housing assistance, helping people pay rents, if they can't find houses in the first place, we have a problem. So these are the factors that we're wrestling with these days, and as I say, we're very curious to see where the Trump administration and HUD heads, given what is what we're wrestling with across the nation: homelessness, low income, and housing stressors.
So, since you shared something cool and new, so maybe you can do maybe a 30 seconds of how excited you are, what you think about this. But we're bringing a street newspaper with actually a Chico page, the Homewood Street Journal, which has been shipping papers for about 20 years now, Ed, down in Sacramento. It's one of the oldest ones in North America. Mm-hmm. We've reached an agreement where they're going to ship us 500 copies, and we're going to distribute them. We're going to do a little bit of a vendor program. What do you think about educating folks through street newspapers, Ed Mayer?
Fantastic. Any way we can give the homeless a voice is so important. Their voices are very human. They're very compelling. Everyone has a story. We all have a story. But for those of the homeless who don't necessarily have, how should I say, a vibrant community that they're embedded in, it's very distressful. So for to provide a vehicle for the homeless to speak, a medium for them to be heard, is absolutely fabulous. Very good news.
Thanks a lot, Ed Mayer.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. These are street interviews I did while I was performing the Chico Downtown Business Improvement District Survey. All of these voices are from Downtown Plaza.
I'm here with David. We just did the Downtown Business Improvement District Survey, and he's going to share a few words with our KZFR listeners around the experience of being homeless in the downtown area of Chico. So welcome to KZFR, David.
Good to be here. I think most of what people need is either a day center where they have a place to go during the weekday, or at least some place to sleep during the bad weather and stuff. Open up more buildings, or at least one or two places for bad weather, foul weather and everything. There's probably other things, but I think there's a lot more people that know more about it than I do. But thank you anyway for having me here.
So if I was to ask you to give us just 60 seconds of what you would want our listeners to know about your experience in the downtown business improvement districts, what would that be, Derek?
I have a federal right to sleep, a federal right to a place to sleep, and a federal right not to be woken up. And your phony baloney camping tickets are unlawful with no penal code. And if you continue, I'm going to sue the hell out of the city council.
It went pretty well. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of information, stuff I didn't know, stuff I learned.
So you're talking about the survey?
Yeah.
What would you like our listeners to know about your experience in general being, you know, without a roof down in the business area of Chico?
It's rough. It's not easy at all. Mm-hmm. It's rough out here.
Thank you, Katie. What about you, Shannon?
I think it's really difficult to try and survive and be happy. But every day is a new day. Mm-hmm. So just keep trying. That's all I think I say.
Thank you, ladies. So I'm here with my friend Bill. I can call him a friend. I've known him pretty much the whole time I've been in Chico. And Bill just did the survey. And Bill used to be part of the cleanup crew here that was employed through the JC and the Downtown Business Association. So welcome to KZFR, Bill.
Hello there, Chico.
So, Bill, you know, we just did this survey on your experiences in the downtown business area. I know you've been in Chico 50-some years, but what would you say in a minute or two about explaining your experiences being homeless and downtown in the Business Improvement District?
I think Chico's really a nice town, a lot of nice people, but it seems like if you get into crowds and stuff is when you'll have problems, you know, a crowd of people. Mm-hmm. So I stay away from crowds, stuff like that, yeah.
Anything you would recommend that the city could do that they're not doing, maybe?
Keep a little closer eye on the crowds of people that show up most every day or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's usually where a little bit of trouble will start.
Purple Brian is going to let us know what he'd like our listeners to know about being homeless in the downtown area of Chico, California. Welcome to KZFR. Brian.
I don't speak for all the homeless because there's always going to be a handful of homeless that go, you don't speak for me. But I think a big part of this homeless community here that we have would be to have security, a home, and a purpose. If you gave them three things, then maybe we'd be a stronger America and people wouldn't drink and drug as much and we wouldn't have the homeless problem that we have. Give them a home, give them a purpose, and give them security, and then we'll become a strong America.
I love you guys.
What do you have to say, Ruth?
I love you guys. I'm a minister of the Universal Life Church. I'm a daughter of a geologist. I come from royalty on the cast side of my family with a K. Schofield on the right. I know my history. I want my cat back. Just pray for me today. To be safe and off the streets at night of Chico. It's treacherous down here. Walmart compounded my $100 bill. And the cops threw me on the ground. I got pushed over in the post office this morning. And I love you.
Sure,
I'm a Chilean hippie.
Ruth, you're awesome.
I know it. You Boom. Can't mess with a Pisces. I'm Zachariah, a recovering Catholic. Try that on for size, people.
Thank you. All right, just as we did last week, we're ending the show with Mark Johnson, man, a local musician here in Chico, California. Mark can be reached at 530-230-7596. What else do we need to know about Mark Johnson and your music? Mark Johnson?
Just that Mark Johnson is pursuing a musical career. And, you know, he's trying to get a recording contract, trying to get a little bit of exposure here on the radio. And if anybody wants to reach me about any gigs or about any songs or stuff like that, you can reach me at 530-230-7596. Thanks a lot.
Bam, here we go. Thank you, Mark Johnson.
Every minute of every day without you takes much too long to go by, and my love for you overwhelms me, and sometimes I start to cry, and a man just shouldn't feel such emotion. He's supposed to be stronger in his mind. But when you're gone too long, I lose all control. I need you in my life. I will, I'll wait, I won't, I need. And trust me, I must stay true, 'cause I do love you. All the words I want to say to you.
All right, that's a wrap on the Without a Roof radio program. You can find me on Facebook, Without a Roof, or you can Google Without a Roof. You'll find my homepage, man, because we come right to the top. Until next week, if you have a roof,
be grateful.
I try to remember every minute of every day is 1 minute closer to you. And I want you